Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome, Wisconsin and the world, to the Maggie Dawn Show on this International Women's Day. I am beside myself with excitement and joy to be joined this first segment of my show on International Women's Day by Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. Welcome, Senator, to the Maggie Dawn Show. It's my privilege to have you.
Oh my gosh, it's my privilege to join you. This is awesome, and I'm so glad it's on this very special day where we uplift women and leaders throughout history and looking forward too.
I think the looking forward part is such a critical observation, especially today. For folks that don't know, I want to emphasize and share with people the fact that Your political career is storied. You are a lawyer. You served on Madison's Common Council. You served as a Dane County supervisor. You were then a congressperson and finally a senator. You also served in the state assembly in between all of that. So you've literally seen every level of government, Senator. How does that help inform your policies and viewpoints today, especially as a woman in all those different roles?
Oh my goodness. Well, that's a question that we can spend the next hour talking about. But let me just say, I found huge value in starting at the local level. You know, there's, if you will, an intimacy there where you run for office, you knock on doors, you talk to people about their concerns, their views on different issues. And I feel like I knew every single building in my county board district and a huge percentage of the people that I represent. And it was a really important way for me to really feel like I was representing the people that I got to know during the course of my campaigns and throughout my term there. You lose a little of that when you represent a bigger and bigger district. So by way of example, by the time I was in the House of Representatives, I was representing over 700,000 people, didn't know every building, didn't know every individual, but I had gotten a good training in my role in local government, and just also how the process works. And in particular, things like the importance of listening to your colleagues so that you can forge some relationships with people who might generally think very differently than you, but you find something that you have both worked on or you agree on or some commonality that helps you build majorities to advance policies that help people. In terms of being a woman, I will tell you a story. When I first ran for the state assembly, it was in 1992. And it was immediately following, if you'll recall, for those of us of my age, we recall it vividly, it was when Clarence Thomas was nominated as a Supreme Court justice, and Anita Hill came to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee because they had learned that she had been sexually harassed. And it was not something she was anxious to do by any means. That's an understatement. But it was this shocking scene to watch a panel all of men,
yes,
who were totally insensitive to what being harassed on the job was like. It was quite shocking. And in response, in part, a ton of women ran for office that year. They called it the year of the woman in politics. So I remember I was running for the state assembly in a district in central Madison and the university campus, South Madison, Near East Side, that district. And I was getting interviews with the media saying, all right, it's the year of the woman in politics. What's your women's agenda? Or, you know, I was also running as an out LGBTQ candidate. Yes. And so it's like, what's your gay agenda? And I'm like, actually, I am running for state assembly to represent everyone in this district. You know, the agenda that I have has a lot to do with healthcare and well-being and making sure there's good jobs and making sure there's access to childcare. Sounds familiar to some of the issues we're still dealing with. Fighting discrimination. You know, this was an agenda for all. But it was so interesting to me to have all these reporters thinking, yeah, it's the year of the woman in politics, so you're just running on a woman's agenda, right? No. But what matters is that when we're at the decision-making tables, it makes a difference. I like to say that if you're in the room, the conversation is with you. When you're outside the room, the conversation is about you. So being in the room, being in the conversation, sometimes even changing that conversation, that's when we're making a big difference.
It reminds me very much of what Milwaukee hero Vel Phillips used to say. Yes. Once you get your seat at the table, don't give up that seat. And you have certainly been a hero to so many in the state, both men and women, both gay and straight. I am one of them, Senator. Thank you for your work. Just a very brief story. I shared it with you before we got on air. When you were a young congresswoman, you and I happened to sit next to each other on a plane ride from Madison to D.C. Can't remember a thing we talked about, but I remember leaving that conversation and thinking, this is a kind person. This is a reasonable woman who cares about her constituents, all of them. And I'm so proud and humbled to watch you carry that philosophy from the House into the Senate, our legislature's highest chamber. So thank you for all that work. You mentioned some of the work that you've done, especially in healthcare. I know that you fought very hard with President Biden to get prescription drug prices down. Tell folks a bit about this. So important to all of us.
Absolutely. Well, let me just say as a preface to that, that healthcare really was the singular issue that brought me to want to run for office at any level, because it was so clear to me how screwed up our healthcare system was and still is, but we've made some huge leaps forward. You know, it's partly based on my own experience. I had a childhood illness. I was raised by my grandparents and they had health insurance and then realized, oh my gosh, it doesn't cover grandchildren.
Oh my goodness.
And when I was hospitalized, they were saying, okay, we've got to get her an insurance policy. Well, back then insurance companies could say no. They could say, we don't need to cover you. And so people with pre-existing health conditions or things like diabetes or people who are HIV positive, people who are cancer survivors couldn't get insurance. And we changed that with the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
We said to the insurance companies, you cannot discriminate anymore. And it was my amendment when we were working on putting that bill together that allows young people to stay on their parents' health insurance till they turn 26. And
hooray.
Overnight, when it was implemented, literally millions of uninsured young people got insurance because of that one provision. And then, you know, our fight doesn't stop. We have a lot more to do. So just recently, we passed a bill that requires Medicare to start negotiating with the big pharmaceutical companies that have so much clout and so much power to bring down the prices of prescription drugs. Now, I'm a little frustrated that we're starting out so slowly. We're only starting with 10 drugs that are being negotiated. But anyone who watched the State of the Union last night heard our president's commitment to, like, we're going to ramp this up so that, you know, in the next year that we have hundreds of yes. negotiations ongoing and that we're seeing the prices of hundreds of life-saving, life-extending medications come down. Because as was noted, we pay more than any other country in the world, in part because we don't negotiate. And this will be a game changer And it really, you know, we talk about it in the macro sense, but I know so many people who can't afford their medications and are making these horrific choices between, I met one woman who keeps her heat in the winter down incredibly low so that she will keep her utility bills down so she can afford her medicine. And you hear those trade-offs happening all the time. But we stood up to Big Pharma and we won this round, and we have more to go. But this is really an exciting victory for people, and another step in having a healthcare system that is accessible and high quality and affordable to all.
Healthcare is a human right. Thank you.
It is.
Thank you for fighting for all of us, no matter where we might happen to cast our ballot or for whom. I think that's so important. I know that working to advance women's rights, it has been a passion project as well for you, specifically in this post-Dobbs era. Mm-hmm. Share with folks a little bit about the bills that you've introduced. We just have a little bit of time. Can you stay for another segment, Senator?
I can.
Oh, wonderful. Well, then, before we get to that, because I want to give you plenty of time on this International Women's Day, Anya, I think we can share with the senator a little bit that we put together here at Civic Media. This is a bit of an Onion-esque satirical advertisement, an Oppo ad, if you will. But I think you'll enjoy it. This is from us here at Civic Media to you, Senator Baldwin.
What has Senator Tammy Baldwin done to Wisconsin? Let's take a look at her record. Last year, Senator Baldwin helped lower the cost of insulin for Wisconsin seniors. Shocking? Oh yes, a $35 cap on out-of-pocket costs for senior citizens on Medicare. And there's more. Tammy Baldwin brought home $200 million to fight for clean drinking water for everyone and is helping build actual bridges in Wisconsin by securing over $3 billion through the bipartisan infrastructure law. Is this what the people of Wisconsin want? A radical socialist, communist, Marxist, liberal, feminist in a caravan? A lawmaker doing actual work on your behalf? We know better. So vote for the California guy running against Senator Tammy Baldwin. She needs to stop getting things done for Wisconsin.
We love you.
Hey guys. This is actual good stuff. Did you know? Whatever. Paid for by the We Got Nothing Else Super PAC.
We love you, Tammy. Thank you.
Oh, my God, that's priceless.
I'm here with Senator Tammy Baldwin on this International Women's Day. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more with the senator in just a few moments after these important messages.
This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em.
Certainly ain't Texas. It's all about Wisconsin and Senator Tammy Baldwin on this International Women's Day. Welcome back, Senator, and welcome Wisconsin and everyone who's watching and listening all across the Civic Media Radio Network and extended family. Before we went to break, I was asking you about the bills and the actions that you have taken to help ensure free and equal access to health care for all, especially in the wake of Dobbs.
Yes.
Tell folks a bit about the legislation that you've helped support.
Yeah, so first of all, I believe that we all think of America as a place where we advance freedoms and advance rights. And while there's often pushback and, you know, a couple steps forward, a step backwards, we just think of that arc of freedom bending towards justice, right? And it was such a jolt, a shock. It was just almost unbelievable to see us go backwards so far, that we have half of America with fewer rights than their parents and grandparents had. And we must resolve to reverse the Dobbs decision, to reinstate Roe versus Wade. I'm the lead author of a bill called the Women's Health Protection Act. That bill would codify Roe versus Wade at the national level, but it would take the additional and very necessary step of telling states like Wisconsin, like Texas, like Florida, like you can just keep on naming them.
Alabama.
But they cannot pass laws at the state level that make the rights articulated in Roe versus Wade more burdensome or, encumber those rights in ways like we do currently in the state of Wisconsin. We've all, I think, heard stories about the devastating impact on people's lives that the Dobbs decision has had, especially in a state like Wisconsin, where we still have that 1849 statute on the books, even though, thank goodness, a trial court judge has said that she held that it did not apply to the circumstances of abortion care. But 15 months, there was absolutely no access in any county in the state. Now there's access in 3 counties, which means 69 counties still do not have reasonable access. And so this Women's Health Protection Act is critically important in, first of all, just organizing around. And then we certainly have to get it passed. Yeah. It's challenging in the United States Senate, where you need a supermajority, not just a simple majority, in order to pass bills. But I have a plan, which we'll we'll work on. But in the meantime, I also just want to flag that the Dobbs decision, while it didn't directly strike down a bunch of other cases, there was an implication that they were going after contraception. And they were going after a lot of other rights that we hold dear today because of something that you know well called the right to privacy.
Yes.
The Dobbs decision said there is no right to privacy, despite the fact that there's this whole series of cases that were decided based on a right to privacy. It said that it doesn't exist. The word privacy doesn't exist in the U.S. Constitution. Therefore, there could not be a right to privacy implied by the Constitution. But if you look back, that includes the case granting interracial marriages.
Yes.
And the case granting same-sex marriages. And a whole bunch, and the contraception access, as I just described. We've got to be vigilant and protect all of those. And I did want to share one quick hopeful story, uplifting story that should make us feel like we can stand up and win. And that is that when the Dobbs decision came out and it had this implicit, if not explicit, attack on same-sex marriage and implicit attack on interracial marriage, we brought forward a bill called the Respect for Marriage Act that is an insurance policy against a future Supreme Court overturning those cases. And basically says, if you're in a valid marriage, a legally recognized marriage, the federal government in all 50 states must recognize it. And everyone said, oh, in these deeply divided times, no way you're going to pass that. And I said, just you watch. And we worked very hard. We got 12 Republicans to join all 50 Democrats to pass the bill. And it was amazing, and people just didn't think it could be done. So we can do big things still.
Tammy does the impossible, not just for Wisconsinites, but for every single one of us. The thing that I find most troubling about the Dobbs decision, and you referenced this, is not just the attack on privacy and all of its implications, but the logic underlying the ruling was in effect that there is no right, unless it was a right that was articulated expressly in the Constitution or that existed at that time, which by definition takes women and Black folks and LGBTQIA plus folks completely out of the equation, because none of us had any rights back when all of this was written down. I call it a perfectly circular argument to preserve the status quo as it existed back in the 18th century, which apparently is what the Speaker of the House wants it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you have inspired so many, and you have been such a beacon of reasonableness and care for all here in the state of Wisconsin. You began your political career at the tender age of 24, and I wanted to ask you, probably most importantly on International Women's Day, What do you say to all women, no matter what their age, both young, middle-aged folks like myself, and maybe women that are a little bit older than I am, if they are interested in politics or maybe just getting interested in politics, what do you want to share with them today?
Boy, there's so many pieces of advice I would love to offer, but look, our government and our politics are not spectator sports. This is, if we believe, a government of, by, and for the people, us, have to be involved. And just like I was saying earlier about, you know, if you're not in the room, the conversation's about you. If you're in the room, the conversation is with you. Women, we need to be in these conversations. You know, we, all of us, come to our jobs or to our interactions with a life experience behind us, whether that's, a teenager or somebody in their 90s. And when we engage in debate and conversation, we don't leave our life experience at the door as though we were checking our coat before entering the room. It's always with us. And it informs our views on issues. It informs, when you're in politics, how you vote and what issues you prioritize. And so I want folks to value their experience and offering that to the larger conversation. Know your power, basically.
Thank you, Senator Tammy Baldwin. Happy International Women's Day to you.
You too.
To all of us. Because women's history is all of our history. You can come back anytime. I would love to talk to you for the entire 2 hours, but I imagine you have a couple of things on your agenda today.
One or two.
Thanks from everyone here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Senator. Keep up the fantastic work. You are an inspiration. That's Senator Tammy Baldwin here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll be back with more after these important messages at the bottom of the hour. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
But what's puzzling you is just the nature of my game. Oh, yeah. Stuck around St. Petersburg when I saw it was time for a change.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just had one of the thrills of my life. Got to interview Senator Tammy Baldwin, a hero to me and I think to many of us, and certainly an elected official that's not worried about raising her profile, but worried about getting things done that help all of her constituents. Thank you, Senator Baldwin. On this International Women's Day, after Senator Baldwin, who else am I going to bring on but my favorite devil, Mike Crute. Welcome, Mike Crute, post-State of the Union, International Women's Day. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, my friend.
Why don't you have me doing open mic after, you know, Dave Chappelle or something?
Right.
This hardly seems fair on International Women's Day. You and Tammy Baldwin, nice interview, by the way.
Thank you.
I was listening.
Thank you.
I was amongst the many listening to it, but always a pleasure to follow such a great guest. How could I shine by comparison? I can't. So
you do anyways. You, Mike. I think that's what the senator would say, because that's what everybody wants to hear. I wanted to bring you on because I think we got to talk about the State of the Union and the Republican response. I'm sure you and your co-devil will be talking about that a little bit later this afternoon. But just wanted to get your impressions. What did you think of the president's performance right off the bat? Gut reactions.
Crudy is completely invigorated. I thought it was awesome. I thought Joe did a kick-ass job. I thought it was the right tone. I mean, I thought especially in the front half of the speech. And this was the biggest speech of the year, Maggie Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
35 million people maybe listened to that speech. I think he missed an opportunity with no Super Bowl.
Right.
Conversation, but this was a direct conversation with the American people. No interruptions, question mark, you know, just a direct conversation. I thought Joe killed it way over the expectations set by Fox News, let's say.
Yeah, it was really interesting to listen to both Speaker Johnson and Fox News kind of almost immediately pivot away from some of their prior commentary and insinuate he drank too much coffee. There was a lot of, well, now he's got too much energy. Damned if you do and damned if you don't.
It's hard to label that speech Sleepy Joe.
You can't. Here's one of the things that I thought was just amazing about what Joe Biden did, and that is his relatability back to front. He's a normal guy, right? And one of the things that stood out to me about that relatability was his ability to laugh at himself, right? And to poke fun at himself. And it's like, hey, Trump fans, you got your MAGA hat on. Can you point out one time when Trump made fun of himself and like had an honest to goodness chuckle? Because I was racking my brains. Like, I can't even conjure up an image of Trump laughing. Humorless.
Well, he would laugh at you.
Right, but never at himself. No, certainly not. Not a joke at his own expense. I also was basically apoplectic, like lost my marbles following the Republican response by the senator.
My wife, may I interrupt Maggie please. Just for a moment to say in the middle of the Republican response, not even 3 minutes in, my wife said, I've heard enough of this, got up and left the room in disgust. She's like, what is this? I mean, it was so over the top and it was so theatrical and breathless and it was like bad forensics, middle school forensics. This woman is a lawyer, supposedly. I mean, I haven't.
She is. She's a lawyer.
Verified the quality of the law school she went to, Maggie. I didn't go to any law school, so let's assume hers is better than mine. Why would you go out there breathlessly from the kitchen like this? I mean, why didn't she just say, I would prefer to be known as Senator Barefoot and Pregnant?
Not even a patina. That was the framing of that entire response. And upon reflection overnight, and when I woke up this morning, the place that my head was at was whomever her handlers are and whomever sort of set forth this approach for her did the senator incredible damage. They did her a disservice. Putting her out there like that, framing this the visual, the approach, the intro, the end. This woman, by all accounts, is incredibly accomplished. I'm not going to besmirch any of that. She was chief of staff. She was the press secretary for a long-serving Alabama senator. She was a lawyer. She's earned her stripes. She's worked for basically Alabama State Chamber of Commerce. This was a woman who knows her stuff. She didn't talk about stuff. She talked about sort of the 1950s and a hearkening back to June Cleaver and all of those things. And I just, my heart this morning broke for her and for women who are conservative and who want to see not what was yesterday, but what women in the conservative movement might be tomorrow and into the future. I think that was a completely blown opportunity for the GOP to try to actually attract women voters and bring them back into the fold. I'll be interested a little bit later in my show. I'm going to be asking, hey, conservative women, if you're listening, give me a call. Let me know what you think. Because I don't think they're convincing anybody. Do you? I mean, that was just, hey, if you already have your MAGA hat on, let me tell a bunch of things to you that you already believe.
I thought it was a horrible response. It didn't win anyone over. In terms of representation of women, I don't want to speak to that, Maggie. I just maybe the wrong day for Crudy to dig that hole for himself. But as a presentation, I didn't know she used to be a press secretary. So I am going to step out on the plank this far as to say, she's got to know better. Stylistically, that was the worst speech I have ever seen. Probably 35 million maybe watched the first speech, the important right. speech, the Joe Biden speech. But a big number of them, if you're just tuning in for the very first time and they're promising you a Republican response, and I am a news junkie, I had no idea who this senator was. And there was no accomplishment there. There was nothing for me to say, wow, I would follow her. Maggie, I'd follow you anywhere.
Thank you.
This woman, I wouldn't follow in a line at the bank because she's probably heading to the bathroom and I'm looking for the teller.
Right. It just, this is an example, in my opinion, even stepping away from the partisan and the policy, the partisanship and the policy for a moment. This is an example of absolutely terrible advisement. And I think it speaks to sometimes the bubble that an elected official can find themselves in. And if you don't have someone who is a trusted, like, basically interrupter of bad ideas, somebody that stands up and says, now, wait a minute, what if this is a terrible, no good, very bad idea and completely misguided? Forgetting the partisan politics of it all, forgetting the lies that she told, it broke my heart a little bit. I mean, I have to observe the fact she's the youngest woman ever elected to the Senate at 42. I think she was elected at 39. Our youngest male senators were all basically 29 and 30 years old. So, okay, it takes women an additional 10 years. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, when she gave the response last year, stood behind a podium. I want to see a senator speak from a place of authority. Again, to your point, give me something to lead. Give me something that is inspiring. And I forgetting the partisanship of it, I didn't find that there. I found myself sort of cringing through the whole thing. As a man watching it, was it cringy to you as well?
Oh, it was terrible.
Okay.
It was terrible. And let me say the quiet part out loud for our friends across the aisle. So you don't have to say it. Republicans don't like women in positions of authority. They like attractive women. They like them on Fox News. They like the Kristi Noems. They like the Rebecca Clayfishes. They like pretty women who get to be things like lieutenant governor. And they get to sit, you know, at the kids' table. And they like to see them there at the events. They're so pretty. They're charismatic. And I would characterize this woman as one of them because that's how she characterized herself, Maggie Dawn, the greatest accomplishment of her life, wife and mother.
Which is, for many women, one of the highlights of their life. And I am not in any way, shape, or form criticizing or questioning the value and the focus.
No, that was me doing that. That's how you lead your resume, the most important thing ever. Come on, I got kids, I love them, but still.
But the message there, right, like the message was very clear that this is the most important thing about her. And
yes,
for young conservative women out there, that to me is just a message that might ring hollow. If I think that my highest aspiration is to be president and I'm a young conservative woman, what did I just hear from the GOP? And that's basically get back into the kitchen and the bedroom. The image that sort of came to my mind was the robotic Stepford wife, you know, that someone else is pulling the strings on. The weird emotional swings, just the whole thing. Again, cringe just barely even gets there. Folks, I'll pick apart her speech on a substantive basis later in my show. You're not going to want to miss that. Anya's got the sound queued up so I can take it on point by point. Because, again, a lot of lying going on. But, again, I think the overall image they wanted to send was women are wives and mothers. And certainly, if you talk to Mike Johnson, that's the message, too.
And when you make her to deliver the speech, as you noted, not from a lectern, not from a podium, from her freaking kitchen, you know, and that did not ring true. I know the Republican Party has a problem with suburban women. You know, but I didn't want to swap recipes with her. I didn't right, want to see her down at the dog park. You know what I mean? She didn't. If that's your kind of people, you stick to your Baptist Calvinist church down there in Alabama, and I'll stick to my life. I didn't find anything appealing about her or relatable about her. If it was lead from the kitchen, lead from her humanity, but the style. There was nothing human. It was so robotic. It was like Elon Musk giving a speech.
Weird.
Breathlessly. Yeah, it was it's just weird. So weird.
It could have worked. Someone giving that response from their kitchen. What I would have loved to have seen is her sitting there with her husband or him in the background making the dinner. You know, talking about a burden shared is a burden borne. And this is what we're doing. This is family values where we share these responsibilities. We understand that we do this as community and as family. That seems to me to start to elevate a Republican message, a conservative message, and try to connect with those critical female voters, especially in the wake of Dobbs. What I also thought as a substantive matter was really of course we want to protect IVF. Well, she has said publicly numerous times that embryos are human life. And if that's the case, the logical conclusion to that is that destroying an embryo is destroying a life, and that has legal consequences. And that's exactly what the Alabama Supreme Court found. She didn't explain any of that. How do you square those things? It just didn't make any damn sense.
Maggie, I don't know if you noted Rona McDaniel, formerly Romney, they dropped the Romney part, the outgoing Republican National Committee chairperson. She said today, if I understood, you got a problem with abortion. The Republican Party does. A, from her point of view, you got to set some limits, like rape and incest. You know, if you're going to be against abortion, set some specific exemptions. What so many on the Republican side don't want to do, they just want a six-week abortion ban. She effectively said, you got to solve this problem or you're not going to win elections. And by the way, I'm a suburban woman and I do have a few opinions on this topic.
Right. Thanks so much, Mike. Great to have you to get a little bit of the devils going during my 2 o'clock hour. You can check out Mike and Dom coming up 3 o'clock in Madison, 4 o'clock statewide. Thanks much, Mike. We'll be seeing each other soon, friend.
Happy Friday, Maggie Dawn.
Happy Friday, Mike. We'll be back with more on the Maggie Dawn Show after these important messages. I'm about to fire up, everybody. You're not going to want to miss it. When the blitzkrieg raged and the body stank.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Pleased to meet you.
What's up, Wisconsin? Happy International Women's Day. Happy post-State of the Union. Joe Biden out there kicking butt and taking names, calling all of it out, setting forth a very clear policy agenda. I'm going to take you through each of the major elements of Joe Biden's State of the Union after the top of the hour. You're not going to want to miss that because there's so much in there, and it speaks to what will work for every single person in the middle class, whether you voted for Joe Biden or plan to or didn't and won't. Joe Biden has an agenda that will uplift the middle class and put this country on the road to greater wellness, greater well-being for every single one of us that will secure our country. I'm so proud of President Biden and the job he did yesterday. Hooray! We were just chatting before the break with Mike Kroot about the Republican response. I will take us all through that as well. I've got some sound queued up because the woman was lying her butt off as well as being very odd. One of the things that I noted, listen, I've been in courtrooms for a long time. I've appeared before public bodies for basically my entire career in political moments, in legal moments. My job has often been to try to explain complicated things to juries in a relatable way. And I also did a bit of theater and forensics back in the day, before my nose was broken a bunch of times. The delivery, Anya, I just couldn't understand it. Like, who prepped her and went, yep, we're good, let's go with that?
I was so horrified, and I was actually very thankful I didn't have my camera on last night listening to her speech, because my face, all I could think was, back to being in forensics in high school. I did forensics all 4 years, went to state a few times, not to brag.
Brag away.
Okay, I went to state 4 times. But I would see people, do their poetry or do their prose in that very whiny voice where they're like, when my dog ran away and my sandwich fell off the table. And it's like, I understand you have emotion. This is too much and too weird And that kitchen was too, not enough and too weird, was it not?
Well, so clean, like no one with kids, No regular person has a spotless kitchen with nothing on the countertops. Again, the setup was weird.
Yes.
To me, one of the my biggest, from a delivery perspective, that my biggest objection was the breathiness of the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, I, as a woman, again, who's had to speak in all kinds of boardrooms and courtrooms and legislative chambers, speaking with a full-throated voice and owning your physical place and filling your lungs and speaking with authority is important. If people have voted for you, they want to know that you can own a room or own the camera or whatever it is. And she just, that kind of delivery does not communicate that message, which makes me beg the question, and I think does beg the question, why were you speaking like this?
Why are we whispering?
Who are you talking, like, why is that, why speak like that? If that's actually her voice, you know, I'll stand corrected, but it just didn't connect for me at all. Let's go to the phones very briefly. Bob from Madison, you're on the Maggie Noone Show. What do you have to say?
Yeah, I'm worried about the ageism against Joe Biden. He's claimed to be an old person, but old doesn't mean what it was 50 years ago. Nixon at age 81 was the oldest lived president in that early Cold War period. And the ones since then have died at 93, 93, and 94 years old. And then Jimmy Carter, 99. And the three living presidents at 77 are Clinton, Bush, and Trump. And then, of course, Biden at 81. They have 16 or 12 years more, if 93 is the standard. They're easily going to survive probably in the modern era with all this curing of cancer. Yeah,
medical advancements, everybody's living longer. Couldn't agree with you more, Bob. Let's be candid about the ageism that's going on. In the law, we have a saying, if you don't have the law, pound the facts. If you don't have the facts, pound the table. And if you don't have the law, if you don't have the law, pound the facts. If you don't have the facts, pound the law. And if you don't have the law or the facts, you pound the table. This is the Republican equivalent of that. They really can't have policy arguments with Joe Biden because he's kicked Donald Trump's butt up and down on virtually every issue that matters to middle America. So they're, one, obstructing legislation that would help with the migrant crisis that Donald Trump created by allowing COVID to kill and kill and kill. And so when they can't get anything done, when they've got crackpots up and down their ticket, and you can't win on the policy arguments, you got to come up with some other garbage. So let's make it about his age. Now, Biden has had some verbal flubs. Yeah. Trump's verbal flubs, Trump's verbal diarrhea, Trump's complete nonsensical stream of consciousness weirdness outstrips concerns that anyone should have about Joe Biden's verbal missteps from time to time. Listen, I make them. I'm only on the radio 2 hours a day. I can't imagine having to give speeches in the volume and of the depth and complexity that Joe Biden or any president does without having some mishaps or misspeaks. Doing that on top of a speech impediment, damn, right? So it's a complete, that's false, that's fake news, that's a complete distraction. And listen, what's lurking behind that is a racist dog whistle. Every time someone brings up the ageism and the ageist argument, the thing that's not being said, and in some commentary is said, is, oh my God, who wants Kamala Harris to become president? Which is both misogyny and racism. It's called misogynoir. If you haven't heard the term before, it's the combination of factors that Black women face in every facet of Americana. Emmett, whatever his name was from Tennessee, that's like, wow, she can't, Nikki Haley can't scratch her balls, so she ain't no good. That's what this is about. And no offense to the senator from Alabama that gave the Republican rebuttal. You don't help distance yourself from Emmett from Tennessee when you give a rebuttal like that. You double down on that image of women. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got news, weather, and sports at the top of the hour. You're not going to want to miss that. I'm going to come back and lead us all through together Joe Biden's stump speech of stump speeches, because he's in it to win it, folks. Go on, Joe. We're here with you. Fighting for the middle class. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Join our conversation. 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be going to the phones just after these important messages.
And his ministers, Anastasia, scream.